This is Dave Glowatz. Welcome to another in my series of interviews with Ben Jarofsky, who writes on government and politics for the Chicago Reader, and who is here with me today holding a copy of the U.S. Constitution.
Yes.
Have you seen the movie?
No, I haven't seen the movie. No.
That was Bruce Willis, I believe?
No, I missed that movie.
Yeah.
We the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union.
He does a great James Madison, Bruce Willis.
Does he?
Yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, today we're talking about, not the Constitution, we'll talk about that later.
All right.
But today we're talking about an article of yours that appeared in The Reader on August 30, 2012, titled Aikens in Our Midst. And this is about, in light of a recent statement by Missouri Congressman Todd Aiken, you review recent Illinois legislative history.
Yeah, what I wanted to do is to see how out of the norm Representative Aiken was in regards to things happening in Illinois and in regards to opinions and attitudes of Illinois reps and congressmen and politicians in general to abortion. You know, I haven't written about abortion in a while. I wrote about it a few times in the 90s, long before I knew you, Dave.
Some would say you were due.
Yes. I don't even know where to go with that.
It's a late term joke.
Yes. So anyway, I was so astounded. I guess I shouldn't have been, but I was really astounded by Aiken's comments. So I just wanted to see, I was doing more homework for myself. Like, how prevalent are these attitudes among legislators?
You write of a sex education bill sponsored by State Senator Heather Staines, which amends current state law to ensure that sex ed is, quote, medically accurate, unquote. Yeah. But you don't say what the effect of that legislation would be. Could you talk about that?
The legislation, which seems pretty mainstream to me.
Innocuous?
Yeah, innocuous, thank you. Is stuck in limbo, and I don't know if it'll pass. It passed in the Senate, barely, but they don't have enough votes to pass it in the House.
But if passed, what would be the effect?
The effect would be to change the law governing sexual education in public schools. Now, I don't see any evidence that anybody's paying attention to the current existing law. For instance, I was startled to find that if you have a sex education class in a public school, you're supposed to promote monogamous heterosexual marriage, which I think is really sort of an irrelevant issue to sex education.
And we're not that far from Kansas.
Yes. Based on my limited experience of what kids are taught in sex ed classes, I don't believe teachers are promoting that notion. So the legislation, there's a series of information about teaching medically accurate information about how, for instance, somebody would contract AIDS, the impact of condoms, protected sex. In other words, information that is somehow or other relevant to the act of sexual intercourse.
How to prevent sexually transmitted
exactly.
diseases.
All those things.
So that's why you say, for once, you and Senator Staines agree on something.
Senator Staines and I, you know, we're usually on the opposite sides of things. And so that was my shout out to Senator Staines. Show you what a fair guy I am.
You get one phone call return as a payback.
I think I'm so far afield on the whole charter school thing that I will never get a phone call back from Senator
call
Staines.
Call her. See what happens.
Call her, yes.
You also write that, quote, Chicagoans seem physiologically incapable of voting against incumbents, end quote.
Yes.
And I submit, and you probably wouldn't be surprised to hear, that that's not just a Chicago phenomenon.
No.
For example, according to opensecrets.org, in the last 50 years, the incumbent reelection rate in the U.S. House has consistently been over 80% and often over 90%.
That's unbelievable. Wow.
So have you any reason to believe that the reasons for incumbent victories is any different in Illinois than nationally?
Are we any dumber than ordinary citizens throughout the country?
We are close to Kansas.
Yeah. Dave, it's a great question, and I don't know the answer. You know what I always tell you, or anybody, when they say, well, isn't it done any differently anywhere else? And I go, well, I study Chicago. This is sort of my little laboratory.
Can't speak for the nation.
I can't speak for the nation, but, you know, sort of tipping my hand, next week's story where I take a look at
teaser
alert, the Republican Party, God help us all, which is our alternative, one of our alternatives to voting for the Democrats.
God bless America.
Yeah. I watched quite a bit of the Republican convention this week. I was listening to Christopher Christie, who's the governor of New Jersey, going on. And I just got curious, and I took a look, and I saw that they have a TIFF program in New Jersey.
You sat up in your chair.
Yeah, it's like, oh, my God, TIFF's in New Jersey.
You woke up. A reason to pay attention.
So I presume, just as a guess, a starting point guess, that it's probably every bit as corrupt and as horribly overseen as our very own TIFF program. I don't know if that's an excuse for anything. Chicago, here's another delightful thing about Chicagoans. When I point out how ridiculous and absurd their government is, a typical Chicago reaction goes, well, how is that different than anywhere else? And I'm like, you know,
justified.
Well, yeah. That's, well, how is that a justification for an absurd program? I was specifically taking a look at Congressman Dan Lipinski, who's an extremist on the abortion issue, I would say. He's out of the mainstream and is very much opposed to abortion, and had signed on originally to the language about forcible rape. And so I would submit to you, to quote the great Harold Washington, that a majority of the people who vote in the Democratic primary in Lipinski's district are on the opposite side of that issue from Lipinski. And I know it's the Southwest side and Southwest suburban district. I understand that. And it's more conservative than North Side districts. I'm well aware of that. But I still would contend that a majority of the people in that district do not believe in distinguishing between rape and forcible rape on the issue of Medicaid funding. Then the obvious question, well, why don't they vote against him? And that gets to the point of people in Chicago are incapable of voting against an incumbent, even if they disagree with them.
I know we've talked about this before, but it seems like a good time to bring it up again. What's the solution? I mean, what do we do if people continue to not vote the rascals out? We've talked about term limits, which you don't like.
I don't know why, but I'm listening to a lot of Noam Chomsky. I've been watching, you know, clips of him on YouTube. The guy's brilliant. And it just makes me even more aware of my own inconsistencies. So why do people do the things that we do when it comes to voting? I still say that on the issue of abortion rights, there's such a fundamental difference between what Barack Obama represents and Mitt Romney represents that if for no other reason, if this issue is important to you, then you should vote for, well, one or the other. In my case, I'd definitely vote for Barack Obama because he parallels my view on this issue. So if that's the overriding
consideration,
you should definitely vote for Barack Obama. So if it's an overriding issue in the 4th Congressional District? Fourth is Louis. Whatever Lipinski's congressional district is, then you should vote in the Democratic primary for somebody to the left of him. I actually think that economically, Lipinski's to the right of the people in his district. But, you know, I believe that anyway. In general, Chicagoans elect people who are to the right of them on economic issues. That's one of our favorite topics.
Is it because they appeal to their fears and scare them into accepting them as opposed to the greater evil?
I don't know. That's a good question. I know that there's a lot of factors that come into play when people make their choices as to who they're going to vote for. And a lot of it's just a popularity contest. When I look at our local election for alderman of the 47th Ward about a year ago, Amaya Pawar won, and he said all the right things, okay? And then once in office, he completely flip-flopped. Now, there was a gentleman running. He was a Green Party guy, Reichel. I probably, in retrospect, should have voted for him, but I voted for Amaya.
You trusted him.
I trusted him, and I thought he would be the guy who could win. So I made sort of a calculated decision. Most people would be voting for Maya because he was obviously the most popular guy in the room. And as a result, if I added to him, my vote to his total, it would be a greater chance of sending a message. Of course, that message was largely lost because of Maya flip-flop, but you know, there's only so much a voter can do at a certain point. So sometimes it's not the voter's fault. They elect a guy on a reform platform and he changes in office.
Let's talk about the effect of money. One could hypothesize that one of the reasons that Pawar flipped is because of the influence of campaign funding from our mayor, who has a significant what we call war chest, and started showing up at Pawar's fundraisers. And Pawar looks to the future, hypothetically looks to the future, and says, if I want enough cash to be able to be reelected, I got to cozy up to this guy with the cash. So, you know, if you look at it that way, if we could eliminate some of the influence of money, in other words, to take some of the deep pockets out of elections, and there's a initiative going on that I want to mention to you and see what you think of it called the People's Rights Amendment. Have you heard about this?
No, go ahead.
It's a proposed amendment to the Constitution, which we have right here, that asserts that corporations are not people with constitutional rights. So that nullifies the 1886 finding by the Supreme Court that led to so many other things that allows corporations freedom of speech, which translates into unlimited dollars for political campaigns, as asserted in the Citizens United case. And proponents claim that this would go a long way to limit money in elections. Do you have a reaction to that?
Well, I have to read it, but it sounds like something that I would support.
People'sRightsAmendment.org is where our listeners can go.
There's many different ways to try to force government to be more responsive to your needs, but I think the most prudent way is to vote whatever your needs are, you know, to consistently vote for candidates that espouse you. And at times you'll be disappointed, as with Amaya, with a total flip-flop. I think it was, in his case, I hate to keep picking on him. We keep coming back to him, but...
He's the alderman.
I always tell people, read what they have to say, listen to what they have to say, and then make your choice. And then when the guy says A and then does completely flip-flops, and kind of throws that whole theory out the window.
But I take your point very well, that people don't even bother sometimes to do the research, and they end up, as Chomsky would say, voting against their own interests.
Yes.
Because they're just affected by whatever message they feel in the air.
Exactly. So, for instance, I'm bringing back to the abortion issue, the whole sex ed thing, which is just a practical, innocuous bill, can't get passed because of entrenched interests that are afraid that somehow or other, by calling for medically accurate information to be espoused, we're promoting sex among teenagers as if such a thing needs to be promoted. And so we have this bizarre law on our bills. We can't even do that. Then there's the other point that I raised in the article where one of the was a state rep, a Democrat, Lyons, who's leaving office. What was his bill? He wanted to require all women to have
ultrasound. Yeah, so they could see the developing fetus.
I'm sure a lot of his constituents were unaware that he made that proposal. And again, you know, his district on the northwest side, so, oh, well, then it's a conservative district. Well, I don't believe it's as conservative as that bill would suggest. I believe he's out of touch with the constituents in his district. And that's perhaps why he's stepping down and not running for reelection. So I think it's really incumbent upon people to be a little more aware of who they're voting for.
And I hope they're listening to us so they become aware. That's all we have time for. Ben Jarofsky of the Chicago Reader, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, sir.
If you'd like to hear more of our interviews, go to MrRadio.org, where you'll find instructions how to subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss a single interview. Or you can go on iTunes and search for Ben Jarofsky or for me, Dave Glowatz. Thanks for listening.